Blog Talk Radio.
...of KJMA's practice of constructive community reporting, we have invited Dr. Khalid Mohammed, Minister...
Well, well!
Malcolm X.
Black power in it!
Yes, sir.
It's the return of the Crown Royal!
Khalid Mohammed.
King! Tommy! Run it!
Run up in the party, say she come check out this You up in the party, say they run it, come quicker. Black to me old style, revolutionista. Crack a man label, I'm a black terrorist. Come party people and raise your black pistol. Raise up your gun, man, raise up lyrics. King Samir still a mic champion in a dista. Tell the pussy damn me a insurrectionist. Rising on the morning, getting physically fitter. Study up me lesson, cook the food, roll me slipper. We the people in my come from a slave shipper. Hot pun me case, central intelligence. When me bun Babylon, man, come take a whipper. Shot off the clan, black liberationist. Fire them Uncle Tom, integrationist. Pick up all the people in my indigenous.
We want freedom, black man, we up in stand. Oh, freedom, black queen, raise your gun. Oh, freedom, educate the youth and now we all can unite. No man a gun, Babylon for damn freedom. Black man, we up in stand. Oh, freedom, black woman, raise your gun. Of freedom, educate the youth and now we all can unite. No matter gun, Babylon,
born and raised on.
They say the revolution won't be televised. I guess that's why the world turned and paused and moaned when Tupac and Malcolm died. All my bloods and thugs in the Hall of Nights. Keep reading, keep writing, keep fighting for our queens, queens, pawns, trading kings, lie for temporary cause and charms. I'm the son of Nat Turner, the godson of Nikki Giovanni, nephew of Asada Shakur, second son of Afeni Shakur. So you know the pride of the Panthers in me. Marcus Garvey's red, black, and green is in me. Fools getting shot down, locked up for material living. This is all genocide. Let's get free or die trying to save our nation and children. Let's get free or die trying to save our nation and children. Let's get free or die trying to save our nation and children.
Black power and more black power to my people. Welcome back. It's your brother, soldier in arms, comrade in battle, Sean Saddam Kweli. And boy, if you're just joining us, man, we had a power-packed presentation, the first half of Black Power Radio, and we are black at you live, coming in from the hells and the smells of North America. And in this segment of the broadcast, we got to get into some pretty serious and heavy discussion here as we're talking about the destruction of black entertainment and black entertainers. And we'll be joined in just a split second by quite a few people, but first up, our brother, a paralegal with Black Paralegals for Justice, Brother Mark, who's coming in, and then you'll hear from Attorney Kenneth Muhammad, who will also be dealing with the case and what's happening with our brother Leonard Rowe. And if you know Leonard Rowe, have heard of Brother Leonard Rowe, or have listened to our broadcast, you know that he is no stranger to Black Power Radio. But he has been moved on by certain agencies and certain power players within the so-called Jewish community because they're mad that he is exposing what happened to Brother Michael Jackson, the great entertainer, legendary singer, writer, and human being, Michael Jackson, close friend of the Jackson family. You all seen that on my page and the pictures and all of that, and you know we're not jeffing you, but he's going to be on. He's calling. He's held down right now, and we have to rally to organize for the freedom and the liberation, the righteous liberation in name and in deed of Brother Leonard Rose. We'll be on with Brother Mark and him and, of course, that great general who is spearheading it all and making sure that it goes right, our national chairman, Minister Hashim Nzinga. And so the destruction of black entertainment and black entertainers is real. And they're out here moving on people because people are exposing. We're exposing some serious, serious infractions on their behalf and what they've been doing since the early days of Motown and beyond, exploiting black artists and exploiting black people, and it's causing the destruction of the black community. And so we got to go right to the root and go right into what's really going on and those that are there on a day-to-day basis. And Brother Leonard Rowe is the author of the book, What Really Happened to Michael Jackson. And I encourage everybody to go to Amazon.com or Google that, Leonard Rowe and What Really Happened to Michael Jackson, as he uncovers the story. And he has a quote that I put on my page as we prepare to bring on Brother Mark. Quote that he said, which I respect. And he said straight like this. He said that, "I am not one to be intimidated easily or one who will back down quickly." He said, "Michael can't speak now, but I can and I will." And that's quote from Brother Leonard Rowe. So let us move quick now to see if our brother Mark is on. He's scheduled to come here right about now. So if he's not on, we'll get him on. And Brother Mark, if you're in the queue, just press the number one so that you can come in first. But again, we're going to hear from him, from Black Paralegals from Justice. We're going to hear from Brother Kenneth, Attorney Kenneth Muhammad. And also, we'll have a powerhouse presentation from our national chairman and Brother Leonard Rowe. And, of course, we're going to have a revolutionary judge on next week. So, I mean, I'm telling you, Black Power Radio is the place, and there he is now. And so we don't want to waste any time. We want to move this discussion along and get right into it on what's really happening with Brother Leonard Rowe and what really happened to Michael Jackson, the attack on black entertainers. Let's bring in right now Brother Mark. Brother Mark, welcome to Black Power Radio, brother. How are you?
I'm all right. Thank you guys for having me, man. Thank you guys
yes,
so
sir.
Much.
Thank you so much for being on with us. Kind of tell us who you are and tell us what's going on and what's happening. What's happening with Brother Leonard Rowe? What's going on?
Yeah, I wanna jump right on into it. As I've been doing as the legal team, I'm the paralegal. I'm from Black Paralegals for Justice, and I've been working with some of the attorneys that are anticipating taking over this case from the public defender that was assigned to Leonard Rowe. When he was, I thought, arrested. It turns out that Mr. Rowe's case to me looks to be like a case of kidnapping. Number one, from what I can see, there's no warrant. There was no warrant to arrest him. We reached out to the General Counsel of the U.S. Marshal's Office in Washington, D.C., who confirmed that that he should not have been taken if there was not an arrest warrant issued. They claimed that they had an order from the judge to detain Mr. Rowe, but that order came out of New York City, and Mr. Rowe was in Georgia, and it appears to be only valid within 100 miles of where that court sits. So we reached out to the marshals here in the state of Georgia and asked them to produce the warrant and the paperwork that they used to go to Mr. Rowe's home and apprehend him. Now, let me just explain what I mean took place. On Wednesday morning at about 6:30, the marshals came to Mr. Rowe's house, 30 deep, to take Mr. Rowe into custody on a civil contempt charge, meaning that he violated a court order out of a judge in New York City. I believe the order, and this is going to shock a lot of people that are listening, I believe that the order is a fake. I believe that the whole thing is a fraud and an effort to intimidate Mr. Rowe into signing some documents to release some liens that he has placed on several individuals in the industry, in the music business, along with his former attorneys, who it appears have defrauded him out of a lot of money. The number, if I were to say it on the radio, most people wouldn't believe it. But as a result of what he was defrauded out of, he placed some liens, and the liens are somewhere in the ballpark of $1 billion. And you know, when you put that kind of a lien on these Hollywood individuals, they pull out all the stops. So what they did was have a hearing and ask the judge to take Mr. Rowe into custody. The judge told them no, he would not do it. I heard the judge say it myself, as did former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney hear the judge say that he would not arrest Mr. Rowe. They had another hearing and in front of this same judge, and the judge was so sick of these people that he got up and said, I'm hungry, I didn't have lunch, and got up and walked out and left them in the courtroom. All of a sudden now, this judge, who's 92 years old, had a change of heart and decided to send 30 marshals to Mr. Rowe's house to take him into custody. I don't believe it for one bit. I believe the law clerks in his office manufactured that order and sent it down here to Georgia and gave it to the marshal here in Georgia. And the marshal in Georgia turned a blind eye to the fact that the judge, that the order did not have a warrant attached to it, and he dispatched the marshals anyway to come out and grab Mr. Rowe. Now, another reason why I believe it is a fake, because a warrant must contain height, weight, tattoos, a full description of the person whom they are looking to arrest. And if it doesn't contain that, then the warrant is invalid. That is according to the law, right? So those are some of the main points as to why I say Mr. Rowe was kidnapped. They took him to prison, and then they told him, now, when you sign these papers and take these liens off, we'll release you. He's not charged with any crime. There's no case. I mean, if you wanted to go file a motion to have him released or something, his attorneys, there's no case to file the motion in. There's no case number. There's nothing. They essentially kidnapped this man, took him to a private facility, one of these, privately run prisons, and placed him there until he decides to take these liens off of William Morris, the William Morris Agency. I think Ari Emanuel, who's Rahm Emanuel's brother, Tal Dickstein from Loeb & Loeb, Marty Gold, and the law firm Loeb & Loeb, and the law firm Denton's LLP. They're holding him until he takes those liens off of those individuals.
Wow, brothers and sisters, I hope that we are hearing what Brother Mark is saying. Brother Mark, I want to introduce into this discussion and conversation the national chairman of the New Black Panther Party, Brother Minister Hashim Nzinga. Brother Chairman, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir. First of all, I want to say black power to the mighty listening audience of Black Power Radio, New Black Panther Party, New Black Panther Party family. It's a tragedy that is 2014, and here we are talking about brothers getting kidnapped and being in prison by federal marshals for putting lien on rich white people who are stealing and who have been stealing from us for centuries. It makes no sense when I got the call that my big brother Leonard Rowe was stolen in the night from his home here in Georgia, and to have the audacity to bring him in front of a judge and tell him, which is a civil matter, if you take these liens off of my rich white friends, I'll let you go home. But until then, you can't have a bond, and you can't leave. And I thought this was America ran under a constitution, ran under all kinds of liberties for its citizens until they come to you messing with these Jewish and these Anglo-Saxon giants. And now I want to be quiet because you know how hot I am over this. I'm waiting to take it to the streets. So we'll just let the attorneys for now and paralegals handle it. So I always want to bring on our good friend who was with Mr. Leonard Rowe all day yesterday, Attorney Kenneth Muhammad.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I wanted to thank you for having me on the program. I'm new to this particular case, but when I sat down with Mr. Rowe and heard the entire story of what happened, it's a compelling case. This isn't really just a situation of a person who is going through an individual injustice, but when I was able to hear the full story of what happened to him, it's really something that if the general public heard the entire history of what happened, it would be something that would be all over the news to the extent that our people would be interested, and we know who controls the news media, so you know, to what extent it would actually get to that point, I don't know. But in any event, I think that it's something that is of national interest, something that is of national importance. And I was struck by the entire history of what happened. But the long and short of it is this, that the concert promoters that are black have for a number of years been had requirements placed on them that are, you know, that are substantially different than the requirements that were put on the white concert promoters. Essentially, if a black concert promoter wanted to bring someone like a Janet Jackson in on a particular concert, Mr. Rowe went and described to me in detail what he would have to go through. A lot of times having to put up substantial amount of money as a deposit for each venue that he was trying to bring the artist in on. He found out in his research in one instance where he was brought into a meeting and was able to see the deals that a lot of the white concert promoters were getting. He was able to discover that in situations where he would have had to come out with $150,000, $200,000, the white concert promoters didn't have to put up anything. He did a little bit more digging, and he began to uncover a lot of disparities in the contracting process that the black concert promoters had to go in terms of differences with white concert promoters. That led him to go seek some attorneys. Eventually, he took their advice and filed lawsuits against some of the big companies that are involved with bringing a lot of artists on tours around the country. That the discovery process in that case led him to find through it's a, kind of a long story, but he ended up finding a substantial amount of evidence, including emails from a lot of the whites in the industry using terms like niggers, coons, saying about people like Oprah Winfrey, Janet Jackson, Michael Jackson, and others that, you know, they shouldn't get, they aren't entitled to the amount of money that they're getting, talking about deals that were offered to white concert promoters and how no nigger should get an offer that's similar to it. Information that was pretty damning in terms of what they were saying to one another in their emails back and forth. So he got that information. He got a lot of correspondence. And what essentially happened was he thought he was going down a course where he was going to, you know, basically get justice because he found the evidence that he needed to prove his case. To make a long story short, the attorneys that were involved with his case, he found out later, did some things behind his back that undermined the case. He ended up losing on summary judgment. He ended up losing a number of efforts that he put forward after that. And he came up with an idea when he finally got to the point where he didn't trust any attorneys that he was going to use the lien law statutes, which are state law statutes, to basically make a claim against the people who took his property being the evidence that he had discovered in the case that was never provided to him. He wanted to physically have a copy of all of the emails that he had spent money in discovery to unearth in the computer systems of these top white concert promoters and people behind the entertainment industry. So as has been stated, he filed these liens, and instead of coming to the state of Georgia, instead of coming to the state of Florida, to the state of Alabama, where the liens were actually filed, the people that had the liens against them went back to the same judge that they got to, you know, to rule with them in the first place. Now, I heard what Mark stated, that he doesn't really believe that it was the judge himself that was behind it. He believes that it was the clerks, whoever was behind it, the people in New York, essentially used the system to create an injustice. So he went outside of New York. Instead of coming to fight in Georgia, coming to fight in Alabama, coming to fight in the state of Florida, they went back to the same judge and got that judge to issue an arrest warrant against him and stated that he would stay in jail until he signed a document lifting all of the liens that he filed against the attorneys and others trying to get the evidence that he unearthed. Now, there's several problems with that, but if this came out into the public and everyone knew that the people that are behind all of the top entertainers, and we're talking about people with hundreds of millions of dollars that are behind all of the top entertainers, if they knew that there were emails, and I've heard, I didn't see it myself, and Mark can speak to this more, that the evidence in this case that he spent a number of years pursuing in New York was so voluminous that there were rooms and rooms of boxes of documents, hundreds of boxes of documents. So if people knew that there was a case like this, that somebody found this kind of evidence, that somebody actually had a smoking gun, because black people have been saying for years that we know that there's people that are behind the scenes in the entertainment industry that are preventing, you know, black people from getting the kind of money that whites are getting. If they knew that all the emails were unearthed in one big case and they were sitting there and some crooked things happened to actually steal them and hide them, and then an arrest warrant was put on the person that actually unearthed it, then it would be something that I think would be, you know, pretty compelling to the public. So that's really the situation the brother finds himself in. He's actually in jail right now, waiting for his legal team to put forward their strategy. But brother, from the conversation that I had with him, he isn't the kind of person that just wants to get out of jail. He's adamant that the lien's placed, that he doesn't just throw his hands up and say, okay, I'll do whatever you want me to do to get out of this situation. He's trying to pursue a strategy where he's able to use what's happening to him to bring everything that he found to the public, number one, to expose what they did, number two, but also to get the evidence that was taken and that was held back from him. So I saw it as something compelling and the kind of case that I wanted to be a part of.
Yes, sir. Brother Mark, you want to chime in on that, sir?
If I could add something to that, he can walk out of jail today if he signed those papers. He could literally be out of there in the next 15 minutes if he signed those papers. But he's refused to sign the papers because he's standing on principle and standing on what he truly believes in and his conviction. You got to understand that a lot of the promoters that he started out with, the white ones, as a result of this racist policy and practice, they are filthy rich, worth hundreds of millions of dollars, while the black concert promoters have lost their homes, their families, died, you know, and basically a lot of them have wound up just as destitute as the entertainers have wound up that came from generations before. You know, what Mr. Rowe has found, and I worked in the music business for years, but what he found was the dirty little secret. And he paid $200,000 to get that evidence. And when he got that evidence, that's when his lawyers betrayed him. Because obviously, they could not bring... his law firm was... One of the law firms were Jewish. They were not getting ready to destroy their Jewish brothers and sisters to that extent. They were just not going to do it. And I'll give them this. They offered Mr. Rowe some money. And he reached out to, he also had Willie Gary. Willie Gary told him not to take the money. And it is starting to look like Mr. Gary went behind his back. Our own brother, who looks like us, and schemed with the Jewish lawyers and the defendants, and they pay, it looks like they paid Mr. Gary and sent Leonard Rowe home with nothing. This is the picture that is starting to take shape after all of these years. Recently,
Brother Martin.
Yes.
Brother Mark, let me add to this. First of all, to the Black Power listening audience, Attorney Shabazz came down and talked to Mr. Rowe, and I absolutely believe would have got involved in this case if it wasn't for some of his partners that knew Willie Gary. And my position is, at this point, we gotta tell the good part too. In the early lawsuits, Leonard Rowe received over, he beat some of them Jewish law firms.
Oh, yeah, I was going to tell that, too. I was going to tell that.
Yeah, tell that, because we don't want our people to think we always losers.
Right, right,
go ahead,
right.
Mark, I'll be quiet.
Right, right. Now, he sued 32 defendants. Out of the 32 defendants, 28 settled. But these were the ones who really weren't even that guilty. The two that were the most guilty and the most egregious were the ones who engaged in this fraud, right? So he won on all accounts. Now, interestingly enough, a guy named Marcus Washington works for one of these companies. He wound up suing the same company that Leonard Rose sued for racial discrimination. Leonard Rose said, here, let me give you access to my file to prove that they're racist. And Marcus Washington won his case. And it looks like he's going to be awarded millions of dollars. Now, he was about to receive millions of dollars. But let me tell you what they did. The arbitrator found that the defendants in Marcus Washington cases, in Marcus Washington's case, who was the same defendants in Leonard Rose's case, had engaged in a pattern and practice of racial discrimination. These individuals, had that arbitrator removed, which you cannot do, and is now trying to get another arbitrator, unfortunately one of our people, to overturn what the other arbitrator had put in place for Marcus Washington. It turned out that one of the lawyers who represent the William Morris Agency from the law firm of Loeb & Loeb, his wife was a vice president at the American Arbitration Association, and it was never revealed to Marcus Washington. And it appears that they conspired to have this arbitrator who awarded Marcus Washington a verdict in his favor and awarded him a substantial amount of money before punitives. They had him removed, and they're now having another arbitrator come in and reverse what the first arbitrator had done. Now, you're not supposed to be able to do that. You know, you can't get a do-over after you lose, but these people have been able to get a do-over after they lose. And then we as a race stand up and talk about them, we're referred to as the anti-Semites, when in fact they're the ones who were caught red-handed, referring to us as everything other than a child of God. I've seen the documents. It was pages and pages and pages and pages of the word niggers and the names right next to the word Rosenblum, Saltzman, Friedman, nigger, whatever, whoever else, Coon, Spooks, Jigaboos, their names all accompany these hits and the use of these words. And I grew up in New York City, and I know Jewish names when I see them. And I believe that at least 90% of the people's names that were on that list were of the Jewish persuasion.
And now what they'll do, Brother Mark, they'll come back and call the New Black Panther Party, because we definitely taking this on a national, international scale, because music is a multi-trillion-dollar business, and our people have got assassinated, have gotten jailed, have gotten robbed for too long, and they'll come back and say we're anti-Semitic because about 12 large firms control the whole system, but they're really anti-Semitic. And I'll never forget when Attorney Muhammad called me after he looked at it, said he never seen nothing like this in his life. These are big boys. They control the courtrooms. What did you say, Brother Mark?
What they did is wrong.
Get Leonard Rowe.
What? No, what they did. I'm waiting on Rowe to call in. I told his wife as soon as she calls, I'll have him call me. What they did is absolutely horrible. It is despicable what they have done and the way they behave in the courtrooms. And I know they're listening, and they know that I'm right. I had a case with, you know, they lift. I believe that the order from the judge, the reason why I say it's a fake is because the judge's signature is faded. It's like a fifth generation Xerox copy. And I know that in my case that I had with them before, I've seen them lift signatures from one document and put it on another. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that when a judge says, no, I'm not going to lock someone up, and then you look at the signature on his order, and it's the same signature that was on the other order, just a little faded, and the same signature that was on the order before that, and a little bit more faded, and the same signature that was on the order before that, and a little bit more faded, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that something is wrong here. I'm going to say it once, and I'm going to say it again. They manufactured that order. That order is bogus. And I know they're listening. I have the order in front of a document fraud specialist doing an analysis on it right now, and I'm waiting for their results. And I will bet the farm on it that they come back and say that it's a fraud. Because that's the same way I caught them last time in the case that I had against one of their clients. That same law firm, Loeb & Loeb.
Also, brother, as we know, our brother Leonard Rowe, who had got kidnapped in a dungeon, but he's in good spirit, as attorney Muhammad said, in his book, and we need to say that book a couple of times tonight, Brother Sean, so we can support him, Who Killed Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
he
proved really
in his book
to Mike?
That when Michael
what
Jackson
really
was in New York, the Jews signed his name on a document and notarized it and took control over, I forgot
over
what they took
estate.
Control over, Mark, and it was proven
over his estate.
Men California saying he was there signing a document.
They took control over his estate. His Michael Jackson's kid's name was spelled wrong in the will, and everyone acts like, oh, well, you know, that's just the way it is. People are horrible. And I told an attorney this the other day. I said if there were some black attorneys and some judges that got together and defrauded a Jewish or a white person, the way that these people had defrauded Mr. Rowe with kicking in his door at 5 o'clock in the morning and carting him off to jail, I can guarantee you that that black judge, that black lawyer, the dog, the cat, everybody involved will be in prison when it's all said and done.
Attorney Muhammad, you got anything else to say before we get Mr. Raw?
No, I'm just, listening to the brothers. I agree with everything that's been stated. I think we've come up with a strategy, just for the listening audience to hear. I think we've come up with a strategy that will accomplish all the things that I think Mr. Rowe wants to accomplish, bringing this, first of all, getting his day in court to one degree or another. We're going to get our day in court. We're going to try to bring this issue to the light of day, bring exposure to it. We're going to do everything we can to get the evidence that he lost, and most importantly, we're going to get him out of jail. And to the extent that we can expose the corruption that's really behind his arrest in the first place, then we're going to do that as well.
Yeah. And let me just say, man, I appreciate, everything that you guys are doing for Mr. Rowe, because, that's my ride or die guy. That's my man. And, you know, I appreciate everything that y'all are doing, and this family appreciates everything that y'all are doing also. So I just, well, I have to give you that on their behalf. Say that.
Hey, Mark, let's just talk about Mr. Rowe to our listening audience for a second, and Brother Sean, you can chime in. Let's let our people know that Leonard Rowe is our big brother who brought the Budweiser Superfest, who gave black artists an opportunity to get into arenas and football stadiums and get on the large scale and get big paychecks, which led him to producing some of Michael Jackson's biggest tours. Let's talk about that, and let's talk about why they're targeting him, because not some guy who got lucky. He's been in this for years and years and years. When you look at his book, it goes back 20, 25 years with some of the biggest artists ever to perform that we know about. So we ain't talking about somebody who they just accidentally got. They've been tracking Leonard Rowe a long time.
He's been fighting with them for years. I mean, you know, sometimes we'll be sitting around talking, and he'll tell me a story about, man, I remember one day I had a show. Man, and the arena was full, and it was Marvin Gaye. And I couldn't find Marvin Gaye. Marvin Gaye, I'm looking for Marvin Gaye, couldn't get Marvin Gaye nowhere. He up the street playing basketball, you know, and the arena selling, and the arena full. Everybody looking for Marvin Gaye. And then he'll tell you stories about Barry White. And then he'll tell you stories about Cameo, the Barcades, Funkadelic, Diana Ross, Dionne Warwick, the Spinners. And then he'll start telling you about Michael Jackson, Shalimar, and then he'll tell you about how he had Run DMC, LL Cool J, Houdini, NWA, Dr. Dre, Suge, Snoop, Cash Money, R. Kelly. I mean, we can go on and on and on and on. For 35 years, he is the most prolific concert promoter of our time. He is the Don King of concert promotion. And when you listen to him speak, I always catch these different nuggets. Like, I didn't realize he started Ricky Walker. And if you guys don't know who Ricky Walker is the promoter and the owner of the Universe Soul Circus. He was homeless. And he was going, Rowe's office was down the street from a shelter. And he would go in Rowe's office all the time and ask Rowe for a job. And this one time he walked in the office and Rowe needed to hire somebody. And he gave Ricky Walker that job. And then Rowe told me that Christmas, Ricky Walker called him. Like a few months later, 8, 9 months later, he had a home for his family. And Rowe tells me about how he thanked him, you know, for giving him the opportunity to work and getting him back on his feet. Al Haymon, the same thing. You know, he tells me stories about how Al Haymon would call his office and eventually he gave Al Haymon a shot. So we're not just talking about some Rudy Poo guy. This guy is a legend in our community who should be respected by those from outside of our community. Because the thing that I did not know that I learned from Leonard Rowe was he was the one signing all of those artist paychecks. Because as you know, the record companies weren't giving him any money. Mr. Rowe,
you know,
was
Mark,
the one.
We year before last, before they kidnapped me, we were out on the screen tour with our young artist, Young Trill, with the screen tour with Mindless Behavior. As you know, Jermaine the Free Father ran that tour and taught me a lot on that tour. And I'm talking to him, be darned if he didn't used to work for Leonard Rowe. And
yeah, Leonard Rowe started him too.
That's our big brother,
Michael Marlin.
Michael Marlin, yeah. And so every time I look around, Leonard Rowe done either trained or touched some of the biggest promoters out here now. You know, that's why we're being so careful, and the new Black Panther Party now is on the road with our little and our big, what we call another Tupac, Brother Bootsy, who we broke free out of captivity, and he went out this weekend and filled two arenas with 10,000 people with our Supreme Captain, Brother Akeem, and others protecting his life and making sure he's all right, because Dr. Khalid Muhammad was with Ice Cube, with Public Enemy, Scarface, and many, many other artists, and I was with, you know, UGK and Pimp C and all them, and we're learned to get with these young brothers and put revolution and put the right spirit in their head and not be across the street throwing rocks at our young people and let this kind of stuff happen where while we worrying about what they're saying, these Jewish firms are worrying about the trillions of dollars that they're pumping in back to Israel and everywhere else except in our communities. And no matter what people are saying about our young people and these young artists, when you go to talking about T.I. and Luda and Ice Cube and Dr. Dre, these guys are the one that black entrepreneurs, black CEOs got to go to get loans to start economic development in our community, because Bank of America and these banks ain't never gave us nothing.
That's right. That's right. Not only them. That, I know people that want to run for judges, probably, you know, the Senate, and they have nowhere to go and get money other than from the hip-hop community. And I always tell people who are really critical of, like, the hip-hop community, I always say this. Jewish people control the pornography. You never see them berating one another about that. It's a billion-dollar industry, but you don't see them talking about one another. They say the same thing. Let them do what they do as long as they support our people in the end. Everyone is not going to be a doctor. Everyone's not going to be a lawyer. Everyone's not going to be a school teacher or a revolutionary.
Well, you know, it's a flip side of that coin, too, you know. When we talk about Russell Simmons is a positive guy. When you talk about Berry Gordy and the Temptations, and when you talk about Smokey Robinson, Diana Ross, when you talk about our brother we had on a show a couple of weeks ago, Kenny Gamble with the OJs, with Patti LaBelle, Teddy Pendergraft, music has came in all shapes and forms, you know, from Chuck Berry. So it ain't been negative. It's been in all firms. And even with our rappers, sometimes when we listen close to them and we get past the negativity, they telling the story of our community through their eyes, and sometimes it's reality, and we got to deal with it. And some of the things got to be changed. And as you say, yesterday when we were with Young Bootsy in Birmingham, Alabama, it was a judge with him. And this black judge was asking him to come to his city and talk to the youth, because the youth are listening to him. And so we put revolutionary messages for our young people into these rappers, because some of these young kids ain't listening to me or you or Attorney Muhammad or National Chief of Staff Brother Sean, but they were listening to these rappers. So we get to these rappers and we get in their ear and say, hey, brother, just like Lil Webby, tell the independent woman that we appreciate her being independent. We appreciate her being strong. And so through this whole gender of black culture, we can't hide that Tupac said Brenda's having a baby, and he told the story of her being raped by her uncle. And then his sister come back and win Academy Award, this movie Precious. These stories are true in our community, and we got to face those evils sometime, however they come. And Leonard Rowe has gave us a stage to perform on, and we can never repay him. And he might can't come on Rush Limbaugh's show. He might not get the Hannity and Cohn show or Bill O'Reilly show. But Black Power Radio and the new Black Panther Party is going to carry it from corner to corner and street to street that we going to free Leonard Rowe.
Yeah, I think I was talking to Attorney Muhammad earlier today, and I believe that a letter to the U.S. Marshals Service should be able to get him up out of there. I was talking to the attorney today, and because the whole thing is a dog and pony show. You know, and like I said, we had had an attorney call over to the government attorney, the public defender, and we asked the public defender to get ready to pack his bags and you know, thanks, you know, get ready to pack your bags because there's a legal team that's going to come in. And one of the attorneys said, well, I'm going to send my notice of appearance. And when we thought about it, there's no case number. There's no case against Leonard Rowe for the attorney to appear in. It is the most bizarre thing that I've ever seen. This is why I say that they kidnapped this man. Mr. Rowe lived in a gated community. A couple of weeks ago, a gentleman named Pat showed up, went to his neighbor's house. The neighbor said, Mr. Rowe lives right there. You can go get him right now since you're a marshal. He's home. This gentleman named Pat said, no, I don't want to do that. He took out a piece of paper and he wrote his number down on a piece of paper and ripped it off and he said, here, this is my number. Just give me a call. The neighbor gave the number to Leonard Rowe. Leonard Rowe had his attorney call a gentleman named Pat. He was a Jewish attorney. Jewish attorney called back and told Mr. Rowe, yeah, you got to turn yourself in. Mr. Rowe then had an African-American attorney call Pat, right, to try and negotiate something, work something out. He told the African-American attorney, the gentleman named Pat, that he didn't know who Leonard Rowe was. He'd never heard of Leonard Rowe. He didn't know what the attorney was talking about. This is what this individual named Pat said. Turns out that this individual named Pat, from what we understand, is the supervisor over at the U.S. Marshals. We asked the U.S. here at the U.S. Marshals office in Georgia. We asked the U.S. Marshals here in Georgia to produce a warrant. They could not. And I'm going over this again. We called Washington, D.C., the Office of General Counsel. They called down here to Georgia to get to the bottom of it. Georgia said to call New York. And all of a sudden, Pat is gone for the week. This whole thing is a fraud, and it is a sham. And I was asking the attorneys today to write a letter to the U.S. Marshals Service and demand that Mr. Rowe immediately be released from their custody because they're holding him in a private facility. So the government can't, if I'm not mistaken, the government can't be sued if he's held in a private facility. You understand what I'm saying? So what we're asking him to do is, the U.S. Marshals to do, is to immediately release Mr. Rowe from that facility because this whole thing is a sham and a fraud, or they need to produce a warrant, a valid warrant, and show us exactly what case Mr. Rowe is being held in contempt of. Because the order that was issued in his case came from a case that was actually closed and never reopened. It is like going to the store and buying groceries with counterfeit money and then saying, well, I paid for the groceries. You paid for it, but you bought it with counterfeit money, so you really didn't pay for it. To obtain an order in a case that is closed, yeah, you have an order, but it's not valid because it was not issued in a case that was open. And we spoke to the U.S. Marshals in New York City. They said the case is closed.
Listen, audience.
They said the case. Go ahead.
I was telling Brother Sean, our host, why don't you give an update to our listener and some who might have just tuned in while we waiting on Brother Leonard Rowe to chime in. You can tell them what guests we got on the line, Attorney Muhammad and Market. Just kind of update in case somebody tuned in over the last 5 or 10 minutes, and for they'll know what we're doing and talking about, Brother Sean.
Ain't no doubt about it, brothers and sisters. We are listening right now to Brother Mark from Black Paralegals for Justice, and we're talking also with Attorney Kenneth Muhammad, and we are talking about the case of Brother Leonard Rowe, who is the author of What Happened to Michael Jackson, who, as we have defined tonight, has been kidnapped by the marshals under shaky circumstances, and we are demanding for his release and pushing for his release, as he has put some liens on some so-called Jews' houses, and so they're trying to intimidate our brothers. And so for those of you who have joined us, you are involved in something powerful. As we already noted, Brother Rowe has no intention on backing down or bowing down. I wanted to ask a question to Attorney Muhammad and you, Brother Paralegal Mark, if you all could expound more on this lien business. I know we touched on it in the beginning, but if you all could go deeper into what this lien business, what it means, and how we can protect ourselves on that.
Let me tell you, I was getting ready to get into that. That is a very lethal and a very potent weapon, and they do not want us to know about that. It will bring all of this foolishness that they do to us to an immediate halt. These people pay no attention to Leonard Rowe. He would file motion after motion after motion after motion, and they could care less. He filed a motion 60B. The defendants didn't even answer. But when he sent that notice and demand of a commercial lien, they hightailed it into that courtroom and asked the judge to stop it. I didn't realize how potent of a weapon it was. Now, the thing was, and how we came about the liens, I was doing some legal research on the bonds. And this happened to, and one of my colleagues, this happened to bump into some information on the commercial liens, and they just emailed it over to Leonard Rowe. And that's where the whole process took shape. And let me tell you something. When they say that this is a very potent weapon, it is a very potent weapon. They would not have 5 hearings in less than 1 month. You know how long it takes to get a hearing in front of a judge? You know how many people are sitting in prison right now begging for a hearing and don't know when they can get a hearing? And these people can get a hearing every 10 days about these liens, and then when the liens are placed, they dispatch 30 U.S. Marshals without a warrant, with a fake order, to go and pick this man up and incarcerate him and say, now, you can get out once you sign those liens and take those liens off. Do you know what it takes to really make these people go to that extreme? Those liens are choking them to death. They must get them off. For them to engage in what I believe they engaged in, you know, these liens have got to be taken to them. Normally, they could care less about Leonard Rowe. Now, when you're hit with these liens, it attaches your house, your credit cards. It affects your credit score, your ability to borrow money, your stock price, everything. And let's say company A has a revolving credit line where they borrow money to float. It affects that one or two ways. Either your credit line will get extinguished totally, or you have to borrow the money at a much higher rate. I've seen instances where people had these liens placed on them, and they were out shopping, and all their credit cards and everything shut off. I've read about instances where people had their kids in college, and it shut the whole, you know, they had college loans, and it totally upset that apple cart, and it's almost impossible to get these things off. It is so lethal that if misused, it is called paper terrorism. You have a lot of these Freeman people, right, these white folks in the mountains that don't want to pay taxes, that put these on IRS agents. I read something that a judge had written where he said that these liens are a threat to the national security of this country because it will I can't remember the exact word he said, but it was something to the effect that it will cause federal employees charged with a certain job to not carry out their duty for fear of retaliation of these liens being placed on them. And one of the things you cannot do is place this lien on a public official. You cannot place it on a government employee at all. You'll go to jail. You know, so if you get a ticket and you're pissed off at the guy who wrote you the ticket and you go put a lien on him, that's not cool. You'll wind up in jail, right? But when you have a situation like Mr. Rose where there is a legitimate legitimate discrepancy where Mr. Rowe has been defrauded, right? And he had served them with a notice of intent to place a lien and then the affidavit of truth. And they had failed to refute that affidavit of truth with an affidavit of truth, and then he places them in default, and they fail to cure that default, he has every right to place his lien. And if they want that lien off, they can sue me. They can go and file a lawsuit in the Superior Court in the county in which that lien was placed and ask the jury if those liens should have been placed in the first place. And that is the remedy for the fraud that these people engaged in. It is the remedy for any fraud that an individual engages in against you as a private citizen. It is the most potent and the most lethal thing you can do to an individual next to shooting them. You know? So I just wanted to put that out there.
That's heavy.
And this is not legal advice. This is just what I have researched and what I know and what I have witnessed. When those liens were placed on those individuals, they're not studying no black folks. They could care less. But when those liens were placed on them, I saw something in them that I had never, ever, ever seen in white folks before. These folks went crazy. And someone said to me the other day that the reason why they went and grabbed Mr. Rowe is because they do not want black people engaging in placing those liens, because someone would get the bright idea to do what the Jews do with those liens and use it as a form of receipt of a way to get reparations. From my research, this is the same lien that the Holocaust survivors and the Jewish people have placed on the companies like BMW or anyone who had a hand in exploiting the Jews during World War II. They placed these liens on them, and this is how they have how the method that they have used to get their compensation. The last thing they want is black people using this process against these corporations, maybe like a tobacco corporation if they benefited from slavery. The last thing they want is black people placing liens on that tobacco corporation as a means of reparations for slavery. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. That's heavy, heavy information. So you saying that with the information of this lien process, that basically black people here in America can recoup, that those who are pushing for reparations and damages could really recoup through resource if they understood this lien. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
That's what from my research, this is the method that the Jewish people have used from my research for years. It's been around for years. It's been around for years. And this is not to be taken as legal advice. You just go and Google it, the commercial lien process. It's called a commercial lien. And, if you are in a no-win situation with an adversary in the courts, sometimes you just have to go here. And this will bring it to a head really quickly.
That's heavy as hell, and so that's why they've jumped all over Brother Leonard Rowe, because he already has this understanding. You believe he already knows what's going on, and they're trying to take his power.
Yeah, well, the last thing the record business wants is Sam Cooke's kids, let's say, who've never received a dime from their dad's estate, is placing a lien on them for the money that they are owed.
Hey, Brother Mark?
Yes.
That's a good topic, and we'll get Brother Muhammad back in here, and hopefully Mr. Rowe gets fortunate enough to call us from the dungeons of hell, which we call them, which they put Daniel in the lion's den, and they put Joe's in the lion's den. We done came out of them dens before. They know that because God is with us. And for our listeners, Brother Leonard Rowe has been on Black Power Radio. And if you ever heard him, you know he don't give a damn about no handcuff and no jail cell. All he care about is the truth. Now, attorney Muhammad has recently visited him on yesterday, and he'll give us an update on his spirit. But one of the things you just hit on, Mark, by Sam Cooke, one of the things that touched me in visiting with Mr. Rowe and now knowing him over a year is when he tell me about the phone calls. It's absolutely amazing that he could tell me people like, and I don't want to say names that he didn't mention, but people like Nat King Cole, I think, wife, are a different artist that I just wouldn't believe their families are totally broke, and how they messed Curtis Mayfield's wife out of so much money. You know, it's one thing we read about it, we hear about it, but when an architect of the music industry get to sit you down and show you the numbers and the amount of songs and the catalog of a Curtis Mayfield and how these Jewish firms and companies would use fake documents and scare her into signing documents or threatening that she would be broke. And people like Joe Jackson and real names, man.
Yeah.
That called him literally crying. And we think these people are living high on the hill. You know what I'm saying?
Listen, I was in Brazil with Mr. Rowe. and he was doing an interview. And I got the phone call. And I was talking to the person. And somehow I heard the phone call. And it was, I don't want to say this person's name, but this person was like a Berry Gordy. You understand? I mean, he had a record company, and he was laying them out. He got hit after hit after hit after hit with his record company. And the person died. And his wife was calling looking for $100. You hear me? $100. You would think this guy was a bazillionaire. But no. I remember when Brother Joe Jackson had to have the stroke. Got that call too. Needed money for his medicine. You know what I mean? The last thing these people want, who are cheating us as a people, is us to take up arms with the pen and go to placing these links.
Brother Sean, we're going to try to get Brother Muhammad in here. I guess what we'll do while we're waiting on Brother Leonard Rowland, we'll wait on him to the end of the show, because anytime we got somebody been taken hostage, we're going to be we patient on Black Power Radio.
Yeah, glad hold we on, I'm going to call his wife. Y'all go ahead.
Yeah, I'm still on the line.
Come
yes,
on
sir.
In, attorney.
Yes, sir. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm still on the line. What? I guess you wanted to hear something on the lien topic, or?
No, what's
yes,
up on your heart?
Yeah, yes, sir.
I mean,
just kind of wanted
you
to hit on that some more.
I'm just.
Why is it so serious?
Well, you basically can file a lien in two circumstances. One, you have a judgment against somebody, and you're filing it basically to collect on what you've already won. And then there are certain circumstances where you have a claim against somebody, and you can file it because of your claim. The powerful thing about what Brother did in this instance is he used it because he's basically stating he has a claim. He has a claim to some property that they had taken of his, and he's filing it based on that claim. They had the ability to go into court and challenge that. And the powerful thing about what he did is he's like, fine, come on with it, because he wanted to get out of what had clearly been a corrupt court with regard to the claim that he was pursuing. And he took his claim somewhere else. They could have easily come where he filed the liens and then challenged it and said, okay, you say you got a claim against us. Here's why we say the claim is invalid and the court should set it aside. But they didn't do that because it would have then exposed whether or not what he was saying was correct. And there would have that opened the door up to discovery, finding out information, putting people on the record as to what happened with regard to the evidence that he had collected, you know, that was basically taken and stolen from him. So it was used by Brother as a way to force the issue in a new venue. So There's different circumstances where people could use this remedy. There's a lot of different remedies. It's really just a matter of having knowledge, because, you know, it may be where a lien might be good for one in one situation but not good for another, but there's some other remedy that's good for someone else. But the thing that we need is just knowledge of the process and unity. Really, situations like this, when you go back to what this is all really about, to me, one of the things that I was reflecting over when I sat down with Brother today, you know, and listening to Hashim, I would say that his spirit was very high, and it was a little surprising to me to see someone in jail that felt that he was in there for a just cause and seemed comfortable with it because of the cause that he felt that he was battling. That one of the things that he stated is, They had a document. I'm going off on a tangent a little bit. They have a document that's attached to the order for his arrest that basically calls for the release of the liens. And if he signs the document, then they would let him go. And he said that signing that document to him would be validating all of the things that the people that came against him had did, against him, against his family, against what he was trying to do in the concert promotion business, against his people. And he would rather fight. He would rather sit there. And he had a very high spirit about it. But if you take it back to me, to what this is all about, you have people in powerful positions in the entertainment industry who are looking out for their own people. And in every instance, they do everything that they possibly can to place our people in a disadvantageous position in any business deal or venture when it comes to making money, advancement, even when it comes to the promotion of our own artists, our own people. And one of the things that it just brought to my mind is the question of unity. He gave one example about, a situation where he started to see some of what they were doing behind the scenes right before he originally filed the lawsuit. And, you know, he was kind of in a good position with regard to one artist, and he was able to talk to the artist, talk to some other people that know the artist, and do some things where the white, the white businessmen, concert promoters, et cetera, that were behind the scenes couldn't hold back certain information because of the unity between our people in that one particular case. Now, if we had unity, a certain type of unity, where our promoters, our artists, people that are vendors, contractors, laborers, all of our people on all the different levels, if we were united in a certain kind of way, then a lot of the things that people are doing against us, they just could not do. Now, even in fighting against this injustice, where we are now, we have a situation where we could find ourselves before a black judge within a matter of, you know, days or weeks. And one of the things that we don't know is what are we going to get if, when we have one of our own judges? We don't even know that. So one of the problems that we have when you look at something like this is the Jewish community is united. They're united for their own interests, but it's clear in situations like this, they've been united against our own advancement. It's been documented. They, brother was able to pull up evidence of dozens and dozens of instances where they made black concert promoters charge these exorbitant deposits with money that had to be given to an artist in a specific venue at a promotion. And the whites were not able in court to produce one instance, one, where a white concert promoter had to pay that at any point in time. He was saying that all of the blacks, that's just the way that the business went.
Can I expound on that for a second, Brother Muhammad? Hello?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Look, it's like this. Let's say Beyonce is going for $500,000 a night, right? You want to buy 10 dates on Beyonce. The black concert promoter has to come up with 250,000 times 10. That's $2.5 million. Whereas the white promoter, he doesn't have to come up with anything. Now, when Beyonce goes, does a show, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, the white concert, you'll make, maybe $3 million that night, right? Let's say you turn $3 million that night. The white concert promoter has made a profit of $2.5 million. Let me get these numbers right. He's made $500,000. What did I say she was going for? I got my numbers mixed up. She's going for $500,000, right? So let's say the profit after paying Beyonce was $2 million. Well, That concert promoter made $2 million for putting up nothing. Whereas the black concert promoter, right, for that night, he had to put up the $250,000. Then he had to get the venue. Then he had to pay for the radio promotion. So just to do one show, the black concert promoter would have to pay at least $500,000 or $600,000, whereas up front, you know, whereas the white concert promoters would pay nothing. And let me add one other thing. In the 100-year history of the William Morris Agency, they have never sold a white artist to a black concert promoter. In their 100-year history, they could not produce one contract. But yeah, they
the question,
sell.
The question I'm raising is because it's clear, it's crystal clear, it's documented, the evidence is there, what they're doing, systematic effort to drive out our people from positions of power, from positions of influence, from lucrative contracts, and from opportunities where they can then spread the wealth to black contractors, you know, all the way down from the smallest vendor all the way up to the top artist. They're driving us out of the real money. That's clear, that's documented, that's uncontroverted. But the thing that I'm raising is our unity. If our unity was strong enough, if we could talk, if the artists were united enough, the white concert promoters and all of that, they only have the power because of our disunity, because a person like a Beyonce can find themselves in a certain position where they're negotiating with someone who is doing their promotion because of the position that that person is in. But we aren't thinking to leverage the power that she has from where she is with the power that some of our people have. You might not have any one of our individuals or businesses that are as powerful as the whites, but if we went, talk to this person over here, talk to that person over there, we could do the same types of things among our own people where we're looking out for our own. But the level of disunity, a situation like this highlights it, because all that they're doing, one of the things that struck me when he was kind of going through the history was that the white person was standing in the middle with a concert promoter, thought that the black artist needed to be paid up front a certain amount of money. So the black concert promoter can't come up with the money, and then he's driven out. White person comes in, they don't have to pay any money up front, but the black artist can't just, wasn't communicating where the black concert promoter knows, oh no, you don't got to pay me that up front. They haven't been paying me up front. That, you know, you see what I'm saying? The communication level among our own people was so poor that it allows somebody to come stand in the middle and take everybody's money. All of our people in the whole process, they can come pick off the money from everybody from where they are because we can't talk to each other because of the disunity, because we, the one that feels that they've arrived, you know, they can't deal with somebody that don't seem like they're on a certain level, and they're thinking to lift their own people up. The mentality that we have, this whole situation, it just highlights a serious problem that we have. And then, like I said, we're fighting for justice for brother. We got all this history of all this racism, but we could find ourselves before a black judge in a short amount of time, and we're still going to walk in not knowing if we're going to find something different from the black judge than we would have from the white judge.
I say amen to that. And let me expound on it. As a former member of the group Digital Underground and a couple of other groups, rap groups that I work with, when I came into the business in 1989, 1990. I started out on the performer side, right? And when we would talk to the booking agents, right, I remember them telling us, and I tell Mr. Rovers all the time, they trained us to overcharge you. They trained us not to trust the black concert promoters. It was just something, it was the norm. This is what they told us. You don't trust them. They're no good. They're going to steal your money. They're going to run off and do this. Make sure you get your money in front because they'll never pay you. So this is how we were trained. So when a black concert promoter comes to you, you know, you're new to the game. You're green. These people are feeding you money. They're telling you they're going to make you rich. They got you hood rich. So you listen to them. And they tell you don't trust a black promoter because you're going to wind up broke. When in fact, the black promoter is the one that's going to give you the wealth. And they were the ones that were going to cheat you. But you see, a lot of these artists just don't know. You know what I'm saying? And I say this to say that I know firsthand about what Brother Muhammad is saying because I was on that side of the table also. And I was trained not to trust the black concert promoter. Don't trust the black attorney because he can't get the deal done. I'll give you a case in point. It's not that the black attorney was incompetent. It's that they just wouldn't go along with him. And I'll give you a case in point. I remember Tommy Boy Records had owed me some money. They stole one of my groups. And I had a black attorney arguing with them back and forth, back and forth. And the Tommy Boy Records was not going to give me nothing. I picked up my phone. I called Josh Greer. Josh Greer is a Jewish attorney. I had one conversation with Josh Greer. Josh Greer said, send me the front page and the back page. Now, me and this African-American attorney had been fighting these people for about 3 months and got nowhere. Josh Greer called me back, and he says, okay, you owe me $2,000, your money. It'll be over to you in 72 hours, and it'll be done. It's not that we were wrong. It's that they did not want to settle with the black attorney because they wanted to make it seem as though the black attorney was incompetent. You know what I mean? And this is one of this black attorney that I had is a damn good attorney. But they held the cards. And in order for me to get that money, I had to use one of their people. This is the and that is what really opened my eyes. He said nothing different than what the black attorney said. But when it came from the Jewish attorney, they gave him the money up within 72 hours. That was what opened my eyes. And that is part of what leads to the division in our community and, you know, would make an artist not trust a Leonard Rowe or listen to the white agent or get the white manager. Mr. Rowe is exactly right, and Muhammad is exactly right. We need to trust each other more and get them out of the middle of our business.
Well, it's kind of, Mark, it's kind of what we've been going through this last 2 weeks with Lil Bootsy. You know, when Lil Bootsy got out all of a sudden, Trill Entertainment, and the CEO of the Trill Entertainment has carried Bootsy since he was 15 years old to get him where he is. And now all of a sudden, when he gets to this peak where he's going into the maybe $100,000 a night range, now all of a sudden the distributor, who always been there, now they want to pop up Atlantic Records and act as if they have been in these juke joints and these ghetto clubs and all the places that Trill Entertainment had to go through for 10 years to get Boosie to these arenas with 10,000 people. Now he's safely landed in arenas, and now all the Atlantic Records and the white folk want to show up like they ride or die with them, you know. It's the same old thing over and over again. Sean, maybe we should take some calls. We might have a couple of people that has some interesting questions on this topic matter who's been listening. Might have more than a couple, of course. This is Black Power Radio, as we still anticipate and hope that our brother Leonard Rowe could talk to us from the kidnapped dungeon here in Georgia.
Yes, sir. Brothers and sisters, the number to call is code 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447 to get involved in conversation. We do have a caller on the line. Your area code is 704-713. Again, that's 704-713. You're on live with Black Power Radio. We're talking to Brother Mark from Black Paralegals for Justice, National Chairman Hashim Nzinga, and Attorney Kenneth Muhammad, talking about the conspiracy to destroy black entertainment entertainers. Come on, your questions, your comments. Welcome, Black Power.
Yes, Black Power, definitely excited to be on the call. My name is Brother John C. Barnett of Charlotte, North Carolina, National Civil Rights Activist, and definitely excited about the call. I've been on your call for about maybe 4 or 5 weeks, and I was invited to your call by Brother Shakur, so shout out to Brother Shakur. But I definitely wanted to talk about and then ask a question as well. It's not a mystery that AEG Live is promoters for Michael Jackson would have been concert. They promote Beyonce, promote Kanye West and Usher Raymond. But he's also the same individual that was responsible, I truly believe, in Michael Jackson's death. I'm the life coach for Sunshine Anderson. I want you to share this with y'all. Very important. She had told me, John, we were in the studio all day long. She was famous in Charlotte for making a song called Heard It All Before. I've been working with her. You know, I deal with her legal stuff, her tax stuff. But I'm sitting in the car one night, and she was telling me, she said, John, we sit in this studio all night long, me and Mike Pitts. She's made about 4 albums. And once the album is done, after about 3 or 4 months, they come in and they take the CD almost, they take the music, and they put it in a vault. And when you look at the keyword vault or school locker, it's totally different. Prince, Michael Jackson still got music locked up in a vault. Now, there's a difference between those two. School locker, you can break into that. Me and Brother Shakur can probably pick that lock and probably get in there. But a vault, you got to have access to. So I think historically, when you look at Ray Charles, who was able to give each one of his kids when he died $1 million, he capitalized off the fact that he's going to get $3 or $4 off every album. I think it's important that we can talk about how they're taking money from us. But the brother said something very important. We have to almost begin to start loving and trusting ourselves. And I think it's very important that these artists who've been raped, it's almost like Alcoholic Anonymous. You go into the Alcoholic Anonymous class, you go talk to another alcoholic, to hopefully make sure you don't do alcohol anymore. So in saying that, I think those who've been raped, Michael Bivins, New Edition, you know, they're coming to Charlotte July 7th, I think, and he's telling me a story. I was blessed to promote their shows, about 12 of them. But he was telling me that he still got the same check that Maurice Starr gave him when they dropped him off at the projects of Roxbury, Boston, Massachusetts. And he said they gave him a moped, and they gave him a check for less than $5. He still got that check in his wallet today as a reminder that he need to make sure he get paid off every dime. So they did about 50 shows that year. Maurice Starr picked them up in a bus, took them on 50 shows, and dropped them back off in the projects. And they had a moped, some candy, and a check for less than $5. And now they just now capitalizing off of that almost 30 years later. Now they can say that they can get $20,000 or $30,000 a show, along with Bobby and making sure Bobby shows up and Johnny's there. If they don't show up, they don't get paid. But now they're just not capitalizing off of that. So we need to get these victims, Michael Bivins, the Sunshine Anderson, the Prince even was able to get his music back, you know. And she was telling me, Sunshine was telling me, John, nobody in history has ever done that. She said, how in the world did Prince get his music back? But Prince was able to put that slave on his face, as we remember, as our clothes, and we were able to see what Prince was trying to say. Prince had a platform like Michael Jackson. That's why he wasn't worried about selling records, because he already had his platforms. Million of people are going to pay for his music. He can come to Charlotte tomorrow at 6 o'clock, and it'll be sold out at 4 o'clock. So he capitalized off that platform to say, I'm going to put slave on my face while I'm performing at the Billboard Music Awards, and people are going to start asking why he got slave on his face. So we've been slaves. Prince was a slave. Sunshine was a slave. Michael Bivins was a slave. I think it's important we do musical workshops, because music is very important to black folks. And the spirit and the memory, and may rest in peace, Brother Khalid Muhammad, as I watched the VHS from the from the Nation of Islam store in Charlotte, ran to my mother's house. I said, you got to hear this brother named Khalid Muhammad. And she still remembers Khalid Muhammad to the day when he told Donahue, black folks are people of rhythm and spirit. So what moves us is music, be it Tyler Perry and all the drama that they got going on, but we moved by music. And so we got to capitalize off this music. Because God gave black folks music, but he didn't just give it to us just to entertain us. I truly believe, as I close, that he gave us music for us to come together. Michael Jackson is still, to the day, is known as the most recognizable Negro on the face of the planet, not Elvis. Last year, Elvis made $32 million, I believe. Michael Jackson dead made $212 million. So what are you saying? He's not the king. Michael Jackson is the king. His people in Africa don't even know Barack Obama's name, and they sure don't know George Bush, but they know Michael Jackson because he fed them with We Are the World. You'll catch that next week. So my question is that how can we build a platform as I prepare to call a pastor tomorrow to get a church, and we're going to block a street off for in memory of Malcolm X, which is my request from Brother Shakur to get a church in Charlotte. I got a rapport and a good relationship with these pastors around here. So we're going to try to do something real big for Malcolm X coming up in May. But I want to ask, how can we build that platform? I'm sorry I'm long-winded, but I'm passionate about what I do in reference to getting the artists to come out. If the brother has contact with artists, let's bring them back and set up a musical workshop. You know, right now, as I close, promise I close, we got Jodeci in Charlotte right now, Mr. Dalvin. I just texted him about helping me about a brother he had shot by the police 10 times. I'm trying to get celebrities to get on board the Jonathan Farrell case. Y'all Google that in Charlotte. Brother was wrecked his car, crawled out the back window, ran to a white woman's house. She called
and they shot him. Like,
angry Negro shot me down. And I'm the one, by the blessings of God, that was able to get that brother indicted. I rallied in front of the courthouse. I did press conferences. I screamed to the top of my voice, and I begged these pastors to come out of their closed doors and do a prayer in front of the courthouse before the black folks walked and the jury walked into the courthouse. 3 hours later, we got an indictment. We didn't press the charges. The police pressed the charges. So now I'm taking a little step up. I'm trying to get these celebrities. Sunshine is on board. Special Ed lives in Charlotte. We got Jodeci here. We got EPMD here. We got Soul for Real. A lot of people moving to Charlotte, one of the 13 fastest growing cities in the country. But we need to prepare a musical workshop because music does impact us. The brother said something powerful. He said they won't listen to preachers. Kids may not listen to me. But for some strange reason, they're going to listen to Kanye West. And there was a Sadiq called me a couple weeks ago. How can we get the membership up, John? You're getting more members than us. I said, I'm getting more members than y'all because I'm out on the streets. I said, y'all need to do one thing. Get a rapper to endorse the NAACP membership. I bet you have some members tomorrow. He looked at me like I was crazy. But I know marketing, so I'm telling the truth. Get Kanye West to plug the NAACP for 5 minutes on TV. I bet you get some members tomorrow. And so in saying that, I would like to say, how can we collectively get something set up on a Saturday morning at a local church or a recreation center to have these artists speak to us about the music? Because I got 300 guys in Charlotte with CDs at Walmart, and I got access to lawyers, a lot of lawyers. And I tell them, I said, again, before you try to break your neck to get on stage, it's important, brother, that you get you a lawyer in place. Because I don't want your music being stole from you like Berry Gordy did Marvin Gaye. I just happened to be reading Marvin Gaye tonight and didn't know he exiled overseas to Europe and he was having some tax problems, $4 million. But I didn't know he had made some music over there in Europe. Somebody snuck the CD to Berry Gordy and he released the album without Marvin Gaye knowing it. I didn't know that. So go on Wikipedia and Google Marvin Gaye and look up his career and then you understand, you know, how music are being stolen, even from our own people. So it needs to be protected first. So before you get on stage and sing, make sure you get a lawyer in place to protect your music and to protect those devils from taking our music from us. I'll close on that. And Black Power.
Yes, sir, Black Power. And if you all want to respond to brother.
I'll just say this on the NAACP part. When you study the NAACP all the way back to W.E.D. Boys, the NAACP reached its peak in recruiting when Jackie Robinson started recruiting for the NAACP. Jackie Robinson, the first black baseball player, and that's why he had more FBI fouls than Malcolm X and Marcus Garvey put together. Because when you get these athletes and entertainers, remember they black and remember they steal from the hood. And they come back because of the money that most of the time white corporations put in them to advertise them, to sell them, and to market them. When they turn and come back home, and like Kanye West said,
New Black Panther Party talking about George Bush for 100 years. But when Kanye West said he didn't like black people, the world listened. I'll let Mark and Brother Muhammad have a comment.
Listen to what the brother from Charlotte, North Carolina, Lana said. I mean, I'll be willing, you know, to give my time and my services and do whatever it is, you know, I can do to support his cause. Like I said, my background is the music business. That's the school I come from. That's what I know. I became a paralegal out of necessity, and I realized that there's a need for help out there for our folks outside of the music industry. So I keep one foot in the music business and another foot in the legal world. But, you know, for years I've been hearing about what can we do about, you know, these folks stealing from us and taking from us. And I've come to learn that eventually, after you know, these folks get their head bumped a couple of times, you know, they'll come to their senses, because I don't know what to tell these individuals. I mean, you really can't tell. There's not much that you can tell them when they're hungry, coming up out the hood, and these folks are willing to feed them. You know what I mean? I don't know what to tell them. You know, I've been in that position. You know, and I know when I was coming in the game, I wasn't trying to hear nothing, because I'm living in a one-room shack, and I'm trying to get out of it, and I don't want to sell dope, you know, and I don't want to get into nothing illegal, and this music is going to get me up out of here. So, you know, I did what I had to do in the music industry so I could advance myself and get to where I am now. I talk to folks all the time, and I have my crew that I talk to, you know, and try to work and try to advance. But one thing that Leonard Rowe taught me is when I started hanging out with Rowe, I went through a really bad litigation, made me sick, put me in the hospital, and I was going through like rehab, getting myself back together. I almost had a heart attack, but thank God I didn't. And I was going through rehab and everything, and I would talk to Roy every morning. I would just see him at the IHOP. And when he started telling me the stories about Prince, you know, and what they were doing to Prince, how they're trying to break Prince, how R. Kelly was broke, and, you know, R. Kelly didn't have any money when Roy went to tour him. You know, and he'd given R. Kelly, you know, he had to get R. Kelly on his feet. I realized that all of these artists were suffering in silence. You know, on any given day, I could get a call from Roe. Mark, Master P called me, man, you know. Man, after these folks kick these artists in their tail, they always want to call me. Or, Mark, man, I get this call from Prince today. Or, Lionel Richie did this, man. Or, you know, I always hear that with Ro. And I think that a large part of the reason as to why they fight so hard to discredit him is because he can talk to those artists. He can bring those artists together. A lot of people don't know this, but Leonard Rowe launched Suge Knight's career, for better or for worse. He launched Suge Knight's career. And one thing I say that I loved about Suge, he had a zero tolerance policy when it came to getting his money from them folks. They better have paid Suge Knight. You know what I mean? And, obviously, they went after Suge similar to the way that they went after Roe. That seems to be their M.O. once you get to a certain point. But, you know, all I can say is, man, we got to love one another and share ideas, you know, and just be there to support each other. Like, I'm here to support Ro, and like Ro helped support me through my litigation. You know that's what I believe we have to do, is just support one another. Anybody else?
That's right. Ain't no doubt about that. We'll take another call here. Your area code is 678-670-678-670. You're on live. This is Black Power Radio. We're talking to Brother Mark from Paralegals for Justice, Attorney Kenneth Muhammad, talking to the National Chairman of the New Black Panther Party, Minister Hashim Nzinga. Come on in with your question, your comment. Welcome to the discussion, Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I can hear you well.
Yes. Well, I got a comment and a question. I'm going to give the comment first. First, I'll recommend all the brothers watch Ministers Fire Time, the Time and What Must Be Done series in regards to the shadow government and as it relates to the music industry and the Federal Reserve, that all these guys, all these so-called Jews are interconnected. It's like a nucleus. They all connect to one way or another. They got one brother in the entertainment industry, one brother in the White House. So in the way around it, you're still going to deal with the devil. And another issue is, you know, what is the distribution center? If we control that, would that do any better on our part to keep it in our hands? And another point, we got to control our own propaganda. I heard Dr. Collins say that. He said you got improper propaganda, and we got to put our own propaganda out there, proper propaganda, our own image, and control our image. It's a shame that what they did to Brother Ro. That sounds like the West African slave trade. They kidnapped our people and brought them to a strange land that it wasn't theirs, and they oppressed them with great affliction. So would the distribution center help for us if we control the distribution and the litigation side of lawyers, if we was more united, if we control the distribution, would it help any? That's my question. Thank you, Black Power.
Well, we do have – well, let me say this. There's a new paradigm in the music industry that is really, and I think this is, it should probably be a different show, but this whole streaming, this whole matter of streaming. Right now, anyone can make a record and upload it onto YouTube and get a bazillion hits, or you can upload it on the iTunes or wherever. So distribution is not the problem. What the problem is now is, and it always has been, is that we don't own any radio stations or television stations to promote our own music to our people. Everything that we hear on the radio, or I should say 90% of it, is programmed from someone outside of our community. This is why the radio sounds like crap now. You know what I mean? The key, I don't know how we're going to fix this, is having radio stations like the golden era of hip-hop in the 90s. We had our own. We had BET was ours. We had hip-hop magazines. They were ours. We had record stores. They were ours. And we owned radio stations that were ours. And it produced an era of great music. I mean, when you think back to the 90s, I mean, from 90 to all the way up, every year there was something hot. And if you look at hip-hop, there was a variety. You had Digital Underground, you had NWA, you had Queen Latifah, you had MC Light, you had X-Clan, you know, and then you had Boys Up in the Bay, and you know, it was just a variety of music. And we don't have that today because, one, we don't control the airwaves. We don't have an outlet in terms of record stores. I mean, we have online, which is great, but we have no mechanism in which we can use to market directly to our people like we had when we had a BET. You know what I'm saying? Or like we had when we had that local black radio station in the black community, or like we had when you can walk into a black record store on Tuesday when the new records come out and say, yo, what you got new this in? We just don't have that. And that's something that we have to try and recapture in the music industry. And
comment on that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, Brother Sean, is social media is changing the game. We're dealing with at our National Dignity Summit. We had a brother come in who got $60 million worth of patents and new apps and the way we're going to be able to distribute our music in the future. And as we talk on Black Power Radio, we wouldn't have had this 10 years ago to talk to people in Ghana, people in Mark's country, Barbados, all over the world. We can be heard right now on internet radio, and people can hear an attorney that's from the Nation of Islam that didn't get told what Malcolm got told in the eighth grade, that you can't be an attorney, Malcolm, because your people won't use you, and white people surely ain't going to use you. You can be a carpenter. Now, in 2014, we got a black attorney from the Nation of Islam fighting for a brother who has been kidnapped, and a brother from another, one of our black islands, fighting strong, who came up in Brooklyn and built an empire.
Queens.
You got to have that stuff right in New York. You can't be mixing that up. But anyway, this is really a great night on Black Power Radio, and a salute to Brother Leonard Rowe, who they probably keep you from using that phone. But soon this will end, because what we all say and what we all have said over and over again, we are the artists. We are the songwriter.
That's right.
We are the producer of the song. We mix and master the song. Now these young people get a computer, and they got their own studio. We used to have to go pay to get in Jive Studio that was owned by one of those South African Jews. We had to pay to get on their tour bus. We had to pay to get in their hotel. Now we're in a hotel that's owned by Michael B. Roberts. Now we got our own tour buses. We got everything that's coming together. They see it coming together. And Leonard Rowe right now could be at the peak of a revolution that would change history in the music game forever. That's why it's so important that we get on the air and we tell the story properly. Well, not them, but our people can hear it and understand how close we are to cracking something that has punished our people and not rewarded our people for so long.
Mm-hmm. I agree with the brother
150%. That's right. Family, we got right about 5 minutes left, so we'll take this moment to do our closing section or our parting thoughts here. And we'll start with Brother Mark, your parting thoughts.
Man, let me just say, man, I love what you guys do. I respect what you guys do. Because when all else fails, y'all are all that we have to turn to. That's what I just wanted to put out there, man. I love, you know, Brother Hashim and just the whole crew, man, and what you guys stand for. You know, you guys go out, y'all are the foot soldiers of the black community, you know. And I just wish that more black folks would understand and get it and support what you guys are trying to do. But, you know, it takes a while. It takes a while, you know, and eventually, you know, people will come around. But I will say this. I remember once I was at the courthouse, and I was talking about something. I can't remember what I was talking about. But I told the clerk, I said, you know, I think it was the brother down in Kendrick Johnson. They were talking about Kendrick Johnson. I said, yeah, them Panthers are getting ready to go down there. And if you saw the way the people's eyes lit up behind the counter, they were like, the Panthers going down there? The Panthers going down there? You know what I mean? I just want y'all to know that the people are watching. Y'all got a lot of love and a lot of respect out there, man. I just want y'all to know that. And especially Brother Hashim. Whenever I speak to my cousins in England or Canada or Barbados or Trinidad, anywhere around the world, and I talk about that guy who put the bounty on George Zimmerman, everybody knows who he is. Man, I can't say how much I love y'all enough. That's what I got to say.
Black power. Brother, Attorney Kenneth Muhammad, your word, sir.
Oh, yes, sir. First, I just want to thank you for having me on the program. It was definitely informative. But the lesson that I take out of everything that was spoken about is I think, the need for unity. I think we are talking about different things that members of the Jewish community against us, but we can take a lesson from them because they're united. I mean, there were several examples given about things that did to go out of their way to put their own people in a better position business-wise, to do things that were just, manipulate the situation so that others would want to hire their own people. We don't think like that. We don't do things that try to go beyond promotion of ourselves, but thinking for the greater good in business. And if we would take lessons, you know, from what has been done to us, what happened to us in this instance, but how the people that are in these, behind the scenes in these power positions, how they got themselves in those positions, if we took a lesson from it, you know, I think we'd be much better off. But one of the things that I do want to say is I think I'll let the listening audience know that I think we're putting together a pretty good strategy for brother, and we're going to do the best we can to monitor the position that he's in.
Sir, appreciate it. Ashman Chairman, Hashim and Zinger, your word, sir.
Well, when you have a conversation like this for 2 hours, you got to think about people like Billie Holiday talking about strange fruit. You got to think about Donny Hathaway. You got to think about Sam Cooke and Otis Redding and so many who struggled to get across this country. And people like Ray Charles and Brother Stevie Wonder who's still fighting the cause. You got to give Kenny Gamble and so many credit for this conversation tonight. So many queens and so many kings who gave us hope in the midnight hour with a song of love, a song of hope, even in the gospel area that we didn't bring up. So I just say to our people, we got a job to do. God has put this on our plate, and this ain't nothing we can push away from the table. We're going to have to stay here. And we're going to have to eat it if it's bitter or if it's sweet so our kids don't have to go through another generation of being slaves to empower somebody across town when we can be empowering our own community. Black power. Black power.
All right. Black power, black power. And to everybody, for most important discussion, and we will keep everybody in the listening audience updated on what's happening with our brother, Brother Leonard Rowe, but we know that his spirit is strong and unbroken, and we ask that you all in the listening audience replay this broadcast, get this broadcast and replay this and spread this far and wide, near and far, wherever we can to get the information out. So that the people know what's happening, they know the evils of the industry and can avoid the pitfalls. And we want to put pressure on those so-called Jews who think that your power is more powerful than the God that we serve in our unity. We're going to put plenty of pressure on you, and you can best believe it, the pastors are going to take to the streets on your behind. Yes, sir.
Brother Sean, I want to say also we got the documents of the spooks, the coons, and the niggas, and it's undeniable. And we're going to make it public, and we're going to give people, the people that need to, who they need to be writing, the marshals, the judges, whoever crooked in this. We're going to start a writing campaign, a calling campaign,
and we're going to go down to that goddamn justice system or unjustice system, and we're going to go down to FBI headquarters and demand that they let our brother be free. We can no longer
pay people
to disrespect us. These people are on our payroll. The taxpayers on this phone payroll. We're not doing anything illegal. We're not guilty of anything illegal. People who we trust, judges who we trust, marshals who we trust, people who we trust, and they go and get an envelope every Friday or every 2 weeks that we pay them. And we're not going to pay people to do this to our people. And we're not going to be fucking scared and hid in a closet while they do it. We're going to go and tell them, somebody got to stop getting paid. Somebody got to suffer with us if this is what you're going to do with this paycheck.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, brothers, that's the show. We're right now about to sign off. I want to thank you, Brother Mark. Thank you, Attorney Muhammad. Thank you, National Chairman, for your words. And salute out to Brother Leonard Rowe and those who are holding the line for him and for the Jackson family. And so, brothers and sisters, stay tuned to Black Power Radio as we keep you updated on the happenings, the day-to-day, night-to-night happenings right here every Monday night, 8 p.m. until 12 and beyond. Remember, it's Black Power for Black People. It's power to the people. And remember, I told you, if Black people are not free, nobody's free. Black Power.